Mark, I think everybody's present, right? So we can start promptly at 7.
Yeah, and then we have Ben Goldthorpe, Greg Adelman, and Tim Woodrow here with us when we go to Melbourne Hill.
Okay. Whenever you're ready, we'll start.
All right, I'm recording, so yeah, we're ready. Chuck, whenever you're ready to go.
Wonderful. Good evening. I'd like to call the January 5th, 2021 Lower Frederick Township Board of Supervisors General Meeting to order. Time is 7 o'clock. Pledge of Allegiance. All rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America
and to the Republic
for which it stands,
one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Roll call. Let the minutes note, or note in the minutes that all board members are present this evening, as well as all staff members that are listed on the agenda are also present this evening. Announcements. Mark, can you make the announcement about executive session?
Yes, we held an executive session on December 31st to discuss legal matters.
Great. Further announcements are standard, which I'll read now. Township meetings are recorded for the purpose of preparing the minutes, and the recording is destroyed 6 months after the minutes are approved. This meeting will also be recorded by the teleconference provider. It is requested that all persons wishing to speak before the board shall state their name, address, and the subject matter upon which they wish to speak for the record. In the interest of facilitating the business of the board, all persons addressing the board shall be limited to 2 minutes unless such time is extended by the board for good cause. The Board of Supervisors will provide a reasonable opportunity for citizens to comment on the non-agenda items after all agenda items have been addressed, but prior to the adjournment of the public meeting. Meeting attendees will be able to ask questions at specific times during the meeting through a chat, Zoom chat, or by audio by calling our township office, and that number is forwarded to our manager, or by sending an email to our manager, Mark Hudson. His email address is manager@lowerfrederick.org. Okay, first agenda item for this evening is the update on the Zieglerville Road home heating oil release. Mark.
Thank you, Chuck. DEP continues to work with a contractor to come up with an assessment plan for the property at on Zieglerville Road where we had the home heating oil release. And DEP is talking to a relative of the late property owner to try to get access granted by the relative to that property. We're still in a little bit of limbo because of the death of the property owner.
Any questions for our manager regarding the home status of the home heating oil release? Hearing none. Great. Thank you, Mark, for keeping us up to date.
Yep.
Next agenda items under administrative actions, we have the treasurer's report from our manager.
Okay, we don't have our end of year numbers yet as the year just ended. We'll have those for you at your February 2nd Board of Supervisors meeting. The list of checks in the general fund total $62,061.70. The list of checks in the sewer fund total $22,316.98. And the list of checks in the liquid fuels fund total $2,376.38. And that liquid fuels expenses for salt, for salting the roads. During the month of December, we began working on end of year reports and required end of year reporting.
Any questions for our manager regarding the treasurer's report, the list of checks? So you'll need a motion to approve the checks. Would anybody like to make a motion to approve the list of checks in the general fund, the sewer fund, and the liquid fuels fund?
This is Dan Orff. I'll move to approve the checks as identified by the supervisor and Mark. The manager.
Okay. Get a second.
I'll second.
Okay. Dan Orff makes the motion. Noel Halter second. Is there any further discussion on this agenda item? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the list of checks as described by our manager in the general fund, the sewer fund, and the liquid fuels fund, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any against? Great. Motion carries unanimously. That brings us to public comment on agenda items. Mark, do we have any comments from the public regarding our agenda for tonight?
I am not seeing anything, Chuck.
Okay. Thank you. So our next agenda item here is a request from the developer for Melbourne Hill to come before the Board of Supervisors and discuss the status of their project. So at this point, I will turn it over to, Greg Edelman or Ben Goldthorpe. I'm not sure who.
I'll take it from here, Chuck. I appreciate it. Good evening. Edelman here on behalf of the developer. Happy New Year to everyone. And thank you for putting us on your agenda. We're here this evening to try to have some further discussion on what has been discussed via correspondence between myself and your solicitor, Mr. Nelson, over the last month and a half or so. I think it started with a November 13th letter from Peter, and I responded in the middle of December, and we'd like to have some discussion on, I think it's about five or six topics that are outlined in Peter's letter and my response. But just to give the board an update on where we are, we received your township engineer Carol's review letter just before New Year's, and we're in the process of going through those items. We really didn't see anything major from an engineering standpoint that couldn't be resolved or revised as required. So I think we're really focusing on these five or six items that were outlined in your solicitor's letter and my response. And I can just hit them no particular order, but we'd like to get some feedback from the board on a response and where the board is coming from on some of these issues. If we start with the Little Road sewer extension, where we've the developers agreed to extend sewer along the existing houses on Little Road, there was a request from the township for us to pay the tapping fees for those homes, and we had said that that's not something we agreed to, the developer agreed to, for multiple reasons. One, we're conferring the benefit by actually extending sewer across their properties and stubbing up to their line. But more importantly, it would be up to the township to determine when and if those homes actually have to connect to public sewer. Many times in my experience, when sewer is extended to homes, it's in anticipation of failing on-lot systems. Some still continue to operate, and it becomes, an issue of why don't we keep the existing systems online until the people sell their homes. A lot of times DEP is fine with that as long as there's some definitive time period by which the property owners actually connect. That's what they look for. From our end, we don't think it's fair if we're running the sewer that we would also then pay for their connection when we're running the sewer to their property line and stubbing it so that all they would have to do is run a lateral or reconfigure their own on-site systems. So that's the first issue out of the box that we wanted to discuss with the board. And I don't know, Chuck, how the board would like to handle this, whether you want me to go through everything, and then if the board would like to comment, they can, or we can take it issue by issue.
I'm gonna ask Peter for some direction.
Sure.
Peter Nelson. Yeah, absolutely. Chuck, you know, my recommendation is let's get all the issues out there. And then we can, you know, there's not so many that we're going to forget one. And I think it'll be quicker instead of going back and forth. So, Greg, if you don't mind, just list all six. Sure. And then, you know, the board can speak up.
That sounds fine to me. Thank you. So the second one was dealing with the low pressure sewer system and the grinder pumps. I think the representation was that approximately half of the units would have been serviced by grinder pumps. It turned out after design, it's a little more than half. But those grinder pumps, again, based on my experience in other projects, they're owned and maintained by the individuals and or the association or a combination of two. DEP always requires some oversight agreement, but the oversight agreements usually don't come into effect because the HOA and or the individuals have service contracts, warranties, et cetera. What we'd be looking here is, obviously to have that standard type of approach where there is the oversight, but the owners own them. And of course, whatever language you would need in agreements and restrictions would be subject to the township and township solicitor's review and approval. In many other developments, what we usually do is we have a purchase like a single or two backup grinder pumps to have on hand just in case it becomes an emergency. We've proposed this in other townships, such as New Hanover Township, where their sewer authority is allowing grinder pumps, and what they've asked for is one grinder pump backup, just so they have it in stock, so it's never truly an issue if there is an emergency, and that would be fine. The big issue with the grinder pumps was the request for a $350,000 contribution, and my understanding from, I think, discussing a little bit with Peter was it dealt with the prior condition from conditional use approval where the original developer had to build a treatment plant. Here, the circumstances obviously have changed, and there's no way this project can, financially bear a $350,000 contribution. So the developer has come back and offered $50,000 to be able to do the grinder pumps in lieu of a sewer line, gravity line. The major issue why you do the grinder pumps here is because in order to do gravity, you'd wind up with some very, very deep sewer lines in order to service this project, 20, 21, 22 feet deep. And as far as I know, that's not an ideal situation and certainly not something a sewer authority or a township would want to own and maintain. It's very difficult to get to if there's ever a repair necessary. So here the grinder pumps are the easier alternative. I think the long-term operation and maintenance of grinder pumps is pretty solid. And we could obviously go through with your engineers, select the acceptable make and model and manufacturer of whatever grinder pump would be required. So that's the low pressure sewer system grinder pump issue. There were some sewer planning concerns that there needs to be additional sewer planning done because the route of sewer service for this property is different than what's under your 537 plan, which contemplated additional homes and residences being connected by that original plan. We agree and we understand. The developer's willing to pay $15,000 to do the sewer planning, or we could have our sewer engineer put together the sewer plan, have it reviewed by Carol or whoever at the township, and then have it submitted to DEP. But either way, I think we could get past that issue by preparing the plan, the Act 537 revision, as is required. The next two deal with pedestrian and trail connections, specifically the Cobble Park pedestrian connection, which we understand is of great importance to the township. So what we're willing to do is to go out and try to acquire the private right-of-way that's necessary to make the connection. And I believe Peter is going to supply me with a trail easement document that's acceptable to the township that we can tender to the private owners. There's at least three owners on one route. There are some other alternative routes that we could explore, but the main route to get there requires at least three private property owners to give us rights. The issue becomes when they don't want to give it to us, even when we make a fair market value offer for, you know, what's a trail easement on the front of their property or back or rear of their property. We had asked the township to consider acquiring that, whether it's via eminent domain or whether it's assisting us in the acquisition. And the response that came back from Peter was that the township's not willing to use eminent domain. So we get into a little bit of a pickle, obviously, in that we don't, as a developer, have any ability to force people to sell us trail rights away to make a connection. So here it's not a question of whether the developer's not willing to build it and or acquire it, it's whether we actually can. So that's something that, you know, I come back to the board and again ask for whatever assistance the township can give us in trying to acquire the property rights away to connect the sidewalk trail system to Cobble Park. The second trail was the Sachs Trail easement. And that technically, I don't think abuts our property. What we have done on the plan, the developer has provided a blanket easement over an area of open space so that if and when there's a trail connection, they can run it through the area. We're not really sure where that location is, and we've asked and would like to know where the location of the Sachs Trail actually comes in. But there's obviously some steep slopes in that location. There's also, I think there's a little bit of a riparian corridor also there, but so there's some logistics there. We can't actually make that connection. And what we've done is just provided, per our conditional use approval, provided the rights away, which is just a blanket easement, for the ability to get there if and when that trail is ever to be extended and connected. And then the last thing is not actually on the letters. It's something that we've been trying to get the township to move forward on. It's the PennDOT HOP application. We need the township to sign off and consent on that. And I think it requires the township to agree to take ownership of some parallel stormwater pipe, which is PennDOT's modus of operation, so to speak. Whenever there's a parallel pipe in their right of way, they force municipalities, and I'm sure Peter can speak to that, they force the municipalities to take ownership. Typically what happens is that the HOA winds up agreeing to do a maintenance agreement with the township so that if anything goes wrong, the HOA has to pay for any repairs to the pipe, but the township technically has ownership because that's what PennDOT requires. So we need to resolve that issue and get that PennDOT HOP application submitted. So, and I think that's my list. I don't know, Ben or Tim, if I missed anything, if you wanted to jump in and add a little additional detail to anything I've said, that's perfectly fine.
Greg, Tim Woodrow here. Good evening, everybody. Now, I think you've covered all the things that we have identified in our, I guess, review of Carol's letter and of the recent correspondence from Mr. Nelson. Those are the things that we were discussing and have some question about.
Okay. And Ben, was there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think you hit everything accurately.
Okay. So, all right. So there you go. It's all out on the table. We're happy to have any additional discussion or answer any questions the board may have, but we'd like to try to work to see if we can get to some resolution on these issues, whether it's tonight or in the very near future.
If I may, I have a question about an item you did not mention.
Sure, go ahead.
In Carol's review letter, she mentions having the trails, which are supposed to go in before occupancy. In your plan, they are going in after occupancy.
Right, and generally we don't install all the trails before occupancy because then they just are left there. We can phase them. That's typically what I experience on my other projects, where after a certain number of units, the trails have to be in. But putting them in beforehand, especially if you're dealing with sidewalks which connect to the trails, you'll wind up with a disconnected pedestrian system. So, and I don't know if Tim can talk about the construction sequencing a little better, and I'm sure Carol might want to jump in as well.
Well, I believe for my colleagues, we want to ensure that indeed does happen, that the trails are put in, yeah, that they are not forgotten, and that we have sufficient escrow in case they will be completed.
And that's perfectly appropriate. The escrow has to be up. And I would tell you, timing-wise, sooner is better than later, But doing it before you start construction or any occupancy, you know, it gets a little, I think, depending on how it's laid out, sometimes it gets a little disjointed. So I don't know enough about the construction sequencing to tell you exactly when the ideal time is. Maybe Tim knows a little better than I do, but I agree with your point. They should be in before we're done, at the very latest, if not earlier, because the residents that will live there will want to use them when they're there. So I understand the concept. But Tim, if you can.
Yeah, and I do as well, guys. And certainly one of the worst things that happens is a resident moves in and, you know, a period of years go by and then suddenly a trail gets built and they are very used to having a portion of the land being open and free. And all of a sudden a trail is there. So the timing of trails is very important. And we need to work that kind of cooperatively with the site grading and with the construction of the homes. So I think there is an appropriate time soon after occupancy for that trail to go in. And that's a detail that I'm certain that between Carol and I and the developers, we can come up with a schedule of trail construction, you know, relative to home occupancy that would work for everybody.
Or you can phase it so that some of the trail is in before all of the houses are occupied.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you can do that. That's correct. There are certain portions, I'm sure, that won't be disturbed at all by future construction and grading that we can do. One of the things we want to make sure is that when the trail goes in, you know, it stays structurally secure and doesn't have any failure as well. So putting them in too early, sometimes you get, you know, construction going on it, around it. You don't want to actually cause any weakness to its stability. So Tim's right. I mean, we can figure out something that works and certainly make it subject to your township engineer's review and approval.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is Chuck Yeiser. Peter, I'm assuming that you would also be able to assist us in working through that issue in terms
of generally, you know, as mentioned, the escrow money along with the development agreement is going to guarantee that if they fail to put their trail in, you know, the township's going to be able to pull that money and get it. So if the concern is the developer, you know, finishing the project and getting out of town without the trail being built, you know, that's why we have the escrow money in the development agreement to guarantee that that happens. And they're not going to get, they're not even going to get into the maintenance period or be able to dedicate stuff to us without, you know, Carol saying the trail, not only is the trail built, but it's built to spec and it's been properly built and it's going to last a good long time. So, you know, certainly that's part of Carol's job and part of my job to make sure that that happens.
Well, yeah, I think Tim pointed out a bigger issue, which does happen, which is the building is done, people move in, and all of a sudden the residents say, hey, what's that thing going in my backyard? And so that's why, again, I'm only speaking for myself, and I think my colleagues will agree with me, I hope, but we don't want to see the trail being the absolute last thing that happens.
Right. No, at
least all of it.
That has always been a consistent point raised by our planning commission going back to 2006, whenever we first looked at this plan. That's something we felt strongly about. So I think we're all on the same page there.
Yeah. And I don't think we disagree. You know, it's just a question of, can it all be built in the beginning? And usually the answer is no. Can portions of it be built? Sure. And that's what I think, you know, you really have to have the engineers and Peter look at and agree. This makes sense in terms of the construction sequencing. To Tim's point, you know, every developer gives their prospective purchaser a plot plan, and the plot plan shows everything. Whether the homeowner chooses to remember and or read it is another, you know, issue. And then, of course, I know even if they do, they still come back to the township to complain. I've obviously been at those meetings where people do that. So we try to put in and as many belt and suspenders as we can in terms of disclosure and notice as to trail locations that are on or near individual lots as much as possible. So we certainly will try to do that here in this instance.
And you know, another thing that, you know, the township could ask the developer to do, if, you know, from a construction sequence standpoint, putting the trail before the house is occupied does not make sense is, you know, maybe, you know, the developer agrees to put in stakes, signage, mm-hmm. Something indicating that a trail will be there in the future. And so at the very least, you know, the homeowners, if they're moving in before a trail is built, all they have to do is look out, you know, out a window and they'll see where that trail is going to be. So it's right. not going to be something that they wake up more one morning and see for the first time.
Right.
If I might offer just a little more insight, this was a condition of approval, to my recollection, for the exact reasons that Marla just highlighted. And the real difficult area is behind lots 36 through lots 40, because the way that trail is configured, it's on a slope that can't be final graded until after the whole development is built and stabilized. So, Tim, perhaps you and I can have a sidebar discussion at another time about whether that trail could be relocated atop the basin berm or further away from those houses, such that it can be built earlier in the process.
Sure, Carol. No, absolutely open to those conversations.
Thank you.
Yeah, just touching on this topic, while you're on the topic of trails, the subject of connecting into the Sachs Trail is something I would find disconcerting if it was decided that you weren't going to make that connection, because I think it's been spelled out and identified in most of the documentation. I mean, I'd have to lean on Carol for confirmation of that, but the trail is identified, and I think it was even one of the contingencies. And if you don't make arrangements to have it put in before you develop all your lots, it might be impossible to gain access to that trail stub.
Well, and Dan, I think that's what we're looking for a little guidance from, because, you know, our understanding was just to provide the easement, but we don't even know where to provide it. And we can't actually physically make the connection because our property isn't adjacent to it. So we do have a little bit of a dilemma. I understand your concern as to, you know, the importance of trail connections, but we're still in a little bit of a limbo land here. We need some direction, some assistance, and then we have to look at, you know, okay, what did the condition really say? What is it doesn't say? Our read was just provide an easement. So that's what we did. But if we're looking at something different, we really need to know all the facts, and we just don't. So the comments keep coming back and forth the same way, and the reviews and our responses, because we can't seem to get off center here without some additional information and help from the township on where is the Sachs Trail? How does it connect? What's the right way to do it? Because the area there is not easy to create a connection through the developer's property.
Yeah, and Dan, Greg is correct. The condition is for the developer to provide an easement for the connection to the Sachs Trail, not to actually construct or install the trail.
Okay, but that condition, if he needs to provide an easement, the easement would have to be such that it would be physically possible to construct the trail.
That's
right. Point in time. And unfortunately, yeah. I believe knowing where the property abuts where the trail is identified, if you place some of the lots where you have them placed, you make it nearly impossible for to access it, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I don't think it's the lots that are the issue, Dan. It's the natural conditions of the ground in that area. But as I said, look, there may be another way to do it. The township may have another idea, right? So you can see where the it's in the steep slope area. So the Sachs property is over there. We don't actually abut where the trail comes in, if you see where the corner is. And then you see that area that's shaded, that's all steep slopes. So the non-steep slope area is actually not on our property. It's closer to Rose Lane. And it could come up and over, but that wouldn't be on the developer's property. So we have some physical barriers here, just based on the topography that creates some challenging issues. And then the creek is a little bit further down. So even if you continue to go as down on the plan sheet, you wind up into a water course. So we need some help on how this could be done and what the township would envision makes sense.
Yeah, Dan, if I could add to that, I think what Greg's suggesting is that the Sachs property is this piece over here. Mm-hmm. And so what we offered, or what we have on our plans currently, is we've given a blanket easement to all of the open space that is open space B in this location to allow the township to connect at any point in the future in any location, rather than provide a specific 20-foot wide easement, perhaps along our property line. We thought it was easier just to provide a blanket easement so the township could do whatever they would like in the future.
I'll mull that over.
Yeah, I mean, we're open to suggestions, Dan, on how to accomplish that. The blanket easement's the easiest because it gives you the most freedom. But if there's a defined way that you want us to set the easement up, or the township does, we can do it. We just all have to make sure that whatever we're laying out makes sense for future construction and use.
And Carol, do we know, is there a specific location where the trail on the Sachs property is supposed to go? Or is that also, you know, up in the air still?
There was a trail location laid out many years ago. Obviously it hasn't come to fruition, and my recollection is that it did run along and parallel to that property line. I could research those records for you in weeks to come.
That'd be helpful, thank you.
Yeah, it was identified, as I remember seeing it, and the easement and the commitment to build the trail, that was all documented.
Yeah, Carol, I think Mark probably has a copy of that in the office.
Yeah, we just, we had looked at it just recently, or it was looked at during the time of the Planning Commission reviewing your documents. So I do know it was called up at once or twice during our various conversations, or the various conversations between the township and Melbourne. I'll be able to find it somewhere.
Yeah, I'll find it.
Marla, right. I brought up this plan that you see on the screen as well, just to explain a little bit more the construction sequence. These grading lines that you see here, this is a temporary sediment basin that gets installed earlier in the process. The permanent basin size is much smaller. It's over in this location. And so that the construction sequence issue is, we can't build this trail until this sediment basin is converted to its final form. And so that's the construction sequence issue that that we're talking about. Certainly, perhaps building this portion of trail over here is feasible, and we have no problem doing that. It was just the way the language was written, it describes it as all trail, and we wanted to be open and say, we can't really do all trail for this specific reason. We'd have to have all of this area stabilized, the houses built, before the conservation district would let us convert the basin to be its smaller form. And then once that happens, then we can go and we can install that section of trail.
Yeah, understood. And I think the solution of demarcating it with signage indicating a future trail would probably solve our concerns.
That makes a lot of sense.
In that specific area.
Sure.
And while if we're all done with the trails, does the board want to move on to basically the first issue, which was the tapping fees?
Peter, before we do that, we didn't really talk about the Cobble Park Trail.
Okay.
You know, and I wanted to get the board's reaction. You know, the developer is going to go out and try to get the right of way. And maybe you don't want to deal with the what if at this point, but the what if is, what if somebody doesn't want to sell it to us? What then is the board willing to have us come back here and have the discussion again and say, okay, here's what we did, here's what we offered, and they said no? Would the board then consider assisting us in some way, shape, or form?
What do you mean by assisting?
Sometimes when townships approach property owners, as opposed to when developers approach property owners, they tend to have better results. Developers are not always met friendly and with open and welcome arms, as I'm sure you can all understand. Whereas if the municipality shows up and says, look, this is really important to us to have these pedestrian connections for all of the community, sometimes it goes a little further. We'd love to have you agree to condemn them, but I've already been told you wouldn't do it. So what we really would need is some assistance, I think, trying to make the right connection. We had proposed a connection where we'd use the shoulder on gravel pike to get there, and your engineer said that wasn't acceptable. So we're really stuck trying to go through private owned property.
I'm speaking for myself. I don't see a problem if we assist you in approaching the homeowners after you've made an attempt. Okay. I don't know how the other board members feel, but.
Greg, to clarify, these are the homeowners along Little Road between the little access easement going out from your property to Little Road and then down to Cobble Park?
Yes, that's correct. That's
the. And you're proposing to put it on the, I would say, southwest side of Little Road?
Yeah, I believe that's it, Peter.
That's correct, guys.
Okay.
So I think is it three property owners, Tim and Ben?
Yeah.
I actually think it's four. There's a fourth person there.
Oh, wait, yeah, the top of the trail. There's a fourth connection. Correct. Okay.
So we'll try.
All right.
Peter, if you can get that trail easement to us as soon as possible, we'll start working on it now.
I should have it to you within a day or two. No problems.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Before you move off of, go ahead, Peter. You go first.
Well, I have one question. You know, once again, I am kind of the new guy coming to this. Is there any reason why we're just looking at the properties on the one side of Little Road and not talking to the Mannings and maybe, you know, do it partly through the Mannings and partly through put the crosswalk somewhere else on Little Road?
Yeah, I think Ben can answer that question.
You know, can we jump back and forth to try to make it down with, you know, finding people who are willing to work with us, or does it have to go down that one side?
I think we had some discussions with the Mannings and they weren't willing.
Okay.
Ben can fill you in a little bit, I guess, Ben, if you want to give some additional background.
Yeah. And we can certainly talk to Tom again. Certainly everyone at the township knows Tom. We had talked about this location, for our trail kind of on the north side of his property. And that was his preference. His house is very close to the existing road. And so putting a trail that came close to his house would come very close to the front of his house. And so the preference was to put it in the location that, we obtained that easement from him on the, I'm going to say the high side of his property.
Okay.
Can you talk to the, looks like the sanitary easement that you have? Does that go through the Littles John Deere property?
We currently show an easement through the Manning and the Little property. That's correct.
Okay. So there wouldn't be an option to be above the sanitary easement for a trail.
We talked to Tom about putting the trail through the sanitary easement. Again, that wasn't his first preference. Just how he uses his property for perspective. This is kind of his backyard. If you can see my my cursor, where this portion of his property is driveway and kind of a garage. And so I think it wasn't necessarily advantageous for him to have people walking on this portion of his property, a sanitary easement that is below grade and, you know, he does not really see it and he can continue to use the property really freely, was more the benefit.
Yeah, this isn't a lot of people's backyards, but I understand the concern.
And had you considered, again, following the sanitary easement, but swinging behind his property, going along his back property line and straight down Littles, like coming, you know, yeah, back there and leveraging the, you know, talking to that property owner and then going down the edge of Littles. That way you avoid a couple properties.
You know, certainly we could have that conversation with the Littles and the Sachs family. We just felt that this would be along, and by this I mean along Little Road, is less intrusive big picture. Bringing it down this way then puts it in the Sachs family backyard, and they have some evergreen arborvitaes kind of buffer there existing. And so I'm not sure if that would be desirable for them, but certainly we're happy to have the conversation. The other option was we did look at bringing it along 29 and just using the shoulder of 29, but we understand that was less advantageous from the township's perspective.
Yeah, it's little, the right of way of Little Road currently too little, too narrow.
Yeah.
To have sidewalks or a trail right along the roadway?
Yeah, so what we found when doing our right-of-way investigation is that Little Road is actually only a 26-foot wide right-of-way, which doesn't necessarily allow for much. The road itself, I think, might be 18 or 20 feet of pavement, and then you have roadside ditches on either side. So there's only a couple feet beyond that.
Yeah, Ben, the only thing I'll add too is that one of the things that was attractive from my planning perspective is that along Little Road, we've got future pedestrian connectivity opportunities to points north on Little Road. And so it did seem to make more sense from an overall planning perspective to use Little Road as much as possible.
And this is a question for the board. Is the board It having the connection as a sidewalk as opposed to an off-road trail, does the board prefer one way or the other?
Sorry, Peter, are you saying it would be a trail that would connect to a sidewalk?
Right. I mean, you know, if it goes along Little Road and it's a sidewalk, you can have the sidewalk relatively close to the cartway. Although if there's a swale there, maybe you're always going to have that disconnect. I was just asking just generally, what is the board looking for more of a 6 or 8 foot wide kind of walking path trail, or is a 4 foot sidewalk sufficient?
Just speaking for myself, I'm not speaking, I think the sidewalk just on along the short section along Little Road would be fine. I mean, one of the other things I wanted to ask about is I was hoping they wouldn't use sidewalks within the development for the trail, because that causes problems from the standpoint of the whole purpose of having a trail in development is to make sure that when people go out and walk, they don't have to walk in front of driveways and other things like that. So, but along Little Road that you have minimal, what do you call that? You have a limited number of options. So that would, to me, seem like a sidewalk along the roadway would seem to be appropriate, but I don't think I would lean heavier for trails in the development itself. That's just my opinion. I mean,
I agree. Our goal is to have a way for people to make connections from their home to places where there are activities, to get to the village center, whether you call it a sidewalk or a trail or a footpath or a zebra, if it serves the purpose and it's safe.
And I mean, that's something I had suggested that in my response letter. One of the only issues we run into is making sure we're not having to install curbing along that roadway, because then all of a sudden you're triggering a whole new stormwater apparatus and you get into some heavy construction. But if there's a swale there, we keep a grass line swale, and Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, we should be able to create a sidewalk with the sufficient stormwater control from the impervious.
Yeah, Greg, I would agree. And I don't know, maybe it's just a matter of materials. You know, I think a sidewalk is being a concrete material, Portland cement concrete, mm-hmm. and I think a trail is asphalt. So I think nomenclature wise, that's what comes to mind to me.
Right, but we can look at both and lay it out, and maybe it's for your township engineer and for the board to take a look at how we lay that out, and then you can really make a decision as opposed to making in a vacuum, just looking at a plan with a shaded area.
Yeah, I raised this subject also, Greg, just if you are approaching the neighbors, so that you can give them
an option,
a definite idea of what's being proposed here.
Right, right.
I mean, I think obviously, I see that you're proposing an 8-foot wide trail throughout most of the development, going around the houses. I think ideally that's what the township would like along Little Road, but I raised that subject, if an 8-foot trail is something too big for the neighbors, if they're willing to do right. something smaller, that's going to work for us or not.
Right. Understand.
Just before we, are we getting close to the end of the discussion of paths and trails?
So, I have one more, Chuck.
Okay. Go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, it's more just informational. So regardless if it's asphalt or Portland cement, how does this typically work as far as after the development is in, as far as maintenance goes over the years? Does the land that it sits on, do they own it? Is it still part of the development? Is it dedicated to the township? How does that typically work?
Typically, under the second class township code, and if the township itself has the appropriate ordinance, typically, sidewalks are maintained by the property owner, the sidewalk whose property the sidewalk goes over or abuts, while trails are generally dedicated to and maintained by either an HOA or the township itself. In this particular instance, you could go either way. I think obviously one of the carrots you could provide to these property owners would be the township saying, yeah, we'll take ownership of the trail and maintain it. Generally speaking, there is no right way of doing it, but generally speaking, sidewalks are maintained by property owners while trails are maintained by the municipality.
Okay. Thank you, Peter. And that's good. And I'd like for the development team to agree that this is all very clear when they're talking to these landowners, how they're envisioning the maintenance and the upkeep of these trails or sidewalks to go into perpetuity.
Right. And Terry, that's why we wanted to use the form provided by the township. So that way all of those issues, are spelled out. And I assume Peter's standard easement agreement has a maintenance provision in it, and it says who maintains the trail. So
yeah,
it
will. Yes.
Thank you.
The language that's in the conditional use refers to this as a pedestrian path. Mm-hmm. The conditional use from 2008, also just to back up a little bit, does talk about the path that goes around the homes, and it says, should the applicant demonstrate to the satisfaction of the township engineer that path construction cannot precede home occupancy on lots 37 through 48, as a temporary stone surface shall be installed in the path location until the trail can be completed. Okay. So we are asking you to put something there.
Well, Chuck,
and
I don't think
what was agreed to.
Yeah, I don't think we can, because it goes through a temporary sediment basin. So that's the issue on the construction sequencing that
okay.
Ben is highlighting.
Just letting you know what was in the original agreement
right.
from 2008.
And obviously, we didn't have a fully engineered plan at that point, et cetera. So we're just going to have to work that one out sequencing wise. But it shouldn't be a major issue, because it's not going to be a major section of the trail. It's just going to be a smaller section.
But just to clarify, if that smaller section on Little Road is part of the pedestrian pathway, then as a pedestrian pathway, would it not be the responsibility of the HOA to maintain?
I mean, we can certainly discuss that. I assume the HOA would be maintaining through the Manning property up to Little Road. So we're really just talking about a short section of pedestrian path from there up to the connection. So that's something that could be spelled out. I mean, that's I don't, you know, unless Ben wants to hit me over the head with a hammer by saying it, I don't think it's a bad thing for the HOA to be obligated to just do that section. It's something I bet you when we go to the property owner, they're going to say, well, I don't want to maintain it. Right. You know, we'll give it to you, but I don't want to be bothered by it.
Looking through the notes from our previous solicitor, I know that he wanted you also, and whether this has happened or we've gotten that far, obviously, to indemnify the Mannings against something happening on that segment going through their property.
Right. Right. Yeah. And then the HOA has to maintain insurance, and that would be covering that property, that portion of the easement as well. So
I guess that brings us back to
sewer.
The first three or four items. I don't know. We want to comment on that. Peter, do you want to comment on that first?
Well, I think, you know, item one regarding the sewer tapping fees, if I remember correctly, and please, one of the board correct me if I misstate anything. I believe that the board's thoughts on the tapping fees were that, you know, for the most part, you know, these seven homes, they don't have failing systems. So there's no reason for them to have to hook into the sewer plant, except for the fact that there is a concern that some or all of their septic systems, the fields, disposal fields, may be extending onto or near the development site and may be disturbed by the development work, to the grading work to put in this development. So I think that the board's thought was, you know, these people are being severely impacted beyond any other adjoining neighbors in that their septic systems may be irreparably harmed when this development is constructed. I believe that was, you know, the kind of the thought process or reasoning behind why the board felt the payment of the tapping fees was an appropriate compensation to these neighbors who are being so impacted. Okay, so that, like I said, if I have that wrong, please let me know.
I think it also goes to back in 2019, when we did have Ben, you were there, as well as your counsel. I forget his name off the top of my head. But, you know, we did have an agreement in working forward in terms of having a 50%, allowing grinder pumps on no more than 50% of the homes. And your current proposal is probably closer to 60% of the homes. And based on your 2008 agreement, you know, there was a sewer plant that was to be built in 40,000 gallons capacity. Per day capacity was going to be dedicated to the township. You were allowed up to 4 grinder pumps, and now we're talking perhaps as many as 27. So in all fairness, if we want to permit the 47 homes, I think that we are trying to do here in these items is to make sure the township was getting certain things for allowing the 47 homes to go in that were going to help our infrastructure. And that I think is really a big part of what is driving where we presently are, in this back and forth.
So Chuck, if I can just address what Peter was saying, because it reminded me of something Peter, you and I have done, and your colleagues have done a lot in Bucks County when it comes to well water. Typically, we do a well water guarantee agreement, where the developer has to place money up or security up for a certain period of time, such that if a water well fails as a result of construction, that money is then used to replace the water well. Couldn't we come up with a similar situation here with the seven homes when it comes to, you know, connecting them to sewer. We'll provide the infrastructure and the stub, but whether they really need to connect or not is still a matter for, you know, the future. It may never happen. And if the township's not going to force them to connect, then we're paying tapping fees for no reason. If it's really being designed and the desire is to make sure they have a sewer alternative if it's necessary, couldn't we come up with a situation or a scenario like the well water guarantee agreement? And wouldn't that address the issue?
I think we certainly could come up with such a guarantee and financial security in that way. I'd have to talk with my board whether or not that mm-hmm. would address their concerns, but
from you understand my concept, right?
Yes, I fully understand it. I think it's a good idea. If the board likes it, it certainly can be done.
Okay. All right. And that to me makes more sense. Sorry, than just paying a tapping fee. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And this is Marla. What time frame are you looking at for that? 1 year, 2 years, 3 years?
No, I think it would be a little bit longer. You're probably looking at, you know, a 4 or 5 year period. The water well agreements, I think water well agreements are usually about 4 or 5.
I'm going from memory. The ones I do, Marla, is that the guarantee stays in place until 5 years after the final home in the development has been occupied. So in reality, from the time the developer actually puts up the money, usually it's close to, 7 to 10 years. That the guarantee is in place and the money's in place to make sure that no one's impacted by the development and the installation of the wells needed to serve the development. So in this case, we could put it up so it's 5 years from, from some point in time. It could be final occupancy of the final home, and that the money's in place that if and when someone's septic system goes kaplooey, that there's the ability for them to quickly hook into the public sewer without having a major financial distress.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say probably somewhere like the point would be completion of grading activities in that area or whatever it is that you're concerned about.
We'd have to work it out slightly different than wells.
Right.
But that's a general thought there, Marla.
And typically then you're not paying a tapping fee for every home that's potentially affected. You're coming up with a certain number, maybe it's 2 or 3, because you don't think everybody's septic system is going to fail. You just have it there just in case somebody's does. I know we had looked at it and it's not fully detectable where their septic fields encroach onto the property or not. So I think Tim had looked at it at one point. It's really not 100% discernible. So I understand the concern. I think this might be a better way to address it than simply writing a check for tapping fees that will never be used potentially.
Hey, Greg, this is Terry. You mentioned 7 houses on Little Road. I'm looking back at your letter from September and you referenced 8 houses. I just want to make sure we're...
Did I use the wrong number? Ben, Tim, help me out. Was it 7 or 8?
Yeah, there's 7 plus Manning's. I think Manning's already connected.
Okay. Yeah, it was a letter from you, Greg, in September that mentioned 8. So I just wanted to...
No problem. Thanks for pointing that out, Terry.
Yeah. But again, overall, I mean, to Chuck's point, I mean, a year ago or so, we were at half capacity over the overall project here. So that number of grinder pumps continues to rise, which is a concern of ours.
Well, Terry, can you tell me what truly is the concern? I mean, and maybe it's not just you speaking, maybe it's the entire board with grinder pumps and what's the apprehension?
I'll let the board take it. Overall, I mean, one of the things that we
can see, please.
I mean, overall, it's, 13 years down the road, it went from a few with a very expensive gravity project to the half, which was an agreement, took a long time. Ben recalls that meeting, and now just keep moving. The ball keeps moving.
Okay, so is it not, from your point, then it's not about necessarily grinder pumps, it's about...
I mean, I have concerns on it. I'll let the board kind of address any specific concerns.
I think it's a general overall fairness in that you're getting a benefit based on this 2008 agreement, and there were things that are promised that I understand you no longer want to participate in those things, for example, the sewer plant. And what we're trying to do is find a path forward that I think is in the spirit of that agreement and is fair to the township in terms of the infrastructure improvements.
Okay.
And, you know, again, the agreement says no more than 4 grinder pumps, and you can have at it and go dig up 29 down as, you know, down to 19 feet. And that's pretty much where we're, as I understand it, where we're working from.
Yeah. Right. And I appreciate what you're saying, because what I was wondering was whether you had, you know, take all those agreements away, whether you had a problem with grinder pumps. To me, it just, I understand where you are. You're working with history, and the history keeps changing on you. So I understand that part. I just wanted to make sure that's where, you know, at least the two of you were coming from. I don't know about the rest of the board, but it helps me understand your thought process.
This is Dan Orfe. There are, in addition to what I agree with, the things that both Terry and Chuck have brought up, but there are additional things when considering grinder pumps as opposed to pure gravity. They've been raised at various meetings that we've had and planning during the planning commission phase of this. So I would say that the fact that we, and again, the negotiations took us from 4 to 6 to 50%, and now you're up to 60%+. So, and there is, this is all going to contribute to a 20-plus-year-old pumping station that is going to take on this scale project. So,
and can I just say just a couple of things here? One, just to the public. I think the board is, and the applicant, we're going to have a discussion over all these items. Then the public will be allowed, we'll ask for public comment at that time, at the end of that discussion. So I have noticed that some members of the public have raised their hands. You're not being ignored. It's just, I think we need to get through our discussion first, and then the public will be allowed to give their opinions at that time. Secondly, in regards to the grinder pump impact, Carol, I think the more grinder pumps we have on the system, it does have some impact on our sewer system. And so it's not just one, you know, giving the developer more and more grinder pumps. You know, the original limitation on the grinder pump was in exchange to other, other advantages given or relief given to the developer were in exchange to a limit, you know, to limitations on the number of grinder pumps. I think that's one of the concerns here, but then there's also engineering concerns due to the number of grinder pumps on the system, the age of the system, and whether or not we have to do upgrades to the system due to these pumps. Is that right? Or am I engineering inappropriately?
Yeah. You're making some stuff up here or there, but you know, the certain number of homes are being constructed, and whether they're, you know, getting to the system by gravity or by a low pressure system, doesn't really affect the whole of the lower Frederick sewer system. It's mostly internal is the issue. So,
when we look at grinder pumps, I think Peter's been hearing a number of our past meetings. As we increase the number of grinder pumps, we have more likelihood of there being some septic sewage in the system, increase in the sewage gases in the system. We also have the simple fact that gravity doesn't fail, and grinder pumps will require more maintenance by the property owner and will probably generate more than one or two phone calls to the township as time goes by and there are some problems with those systems. So, and to Dan's point, in the current Act 537 plan, this development does not go through the Delphi pump station. So now we're taking it back to the Delphi pump station, which is a 20-year-old station. So that's a factor as well. Dan speaks correctly and Peter speaks correctly about what's been discussed to date. I hope that's helpful.
I just wanted to add one thing. Typically, though, with grinder pumps and a low-pressure system, you have less chance of infiltration and inflow into your system. Mm-hmm. So there is a positive here, one in which municipalities try to deal with and they can never reconcile other than slip lining or replacing or creating parallel lines. So there's some historical benefit here, but there's certainly what Carol's saying, you know, it's true. You have more working parts. And when you have more working parts, you certainly do have a chance for failure. And that's why you need the O&M and the backup pumps to be at the ready.
We do recognize that you presented a high quality pump. Right. We like the system that you're presenting. If there has to be a system, that would be the ideal one.
Okay.
And Mark, as far as you're concerned, the township doesn't have any issue with keeping one or these two of these pumps and storing them somewhere. That's not an issue for the township, is it?
No, that's not a problem. We could store it at the sewer plant. Do worry about, and you know, one of the things we were talking about is having the manholes where any of the septic sludge may come into, or septic sewage may come into, lined so that they don't degrade.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that this kind of relates into your I think it's your second point. Yeah, your second point, Greg, regarding the contribution to the township.
Right.
You know, the reason why the township is looking for a contribution is, one, you know, once again, we go back to this, you know, originally this developer, you know, in the township approved a plan based on the developer constructing a sewer plant. And, you know, now that, the development went on so long, the township then undertook that cost. Mm-hmm. And in some way, you know, the developers now taking advantage of all of the taxpayers and all the money they spent on constructing this system. But, you know, we also, you know, the way you have changed this, the due to sewer here, I think it is going to impact, you know, some of the sewer lines, and is going to impact the pump station, and the township is certainly looking for a contribution from the developer to help pay for some of those impacts.
Well, and Peter, of course, they'll be paying tapping fees here, which goes back to the financing and the cost that the township and the taxpayers paid for the sewer treatment plant. Whereas if the developer was building its own plant, they wouldn't be paying a tapping fee because they'd be creating the capacity. So there is a trade-off there. One of the other things we haven't discussed was whether this area could become a special sewer district where you would fix a different fee, maybe get a little extra that way, as opposed to a pure contribution, recognizing some of the things that you said. So there's another concept that we, I think, could explore that would be another way to offset what the township believes it should get by way of a contribution versus what the developer is willing to pay.
And, you know, certainly that could be done. That's feasible. I think at the same time, the township realizes and recognizes that these 47 homes are going to be owned by future residents. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, we don't want to saddle them with extra costs. You know, we kind of look at that as, you know, the developer passing that off.
Yeah, I was referring to the tapping fee cost, not to the rates.
Okay.
So you could create a special sewer district for tapping fees.
Right. Yes.
It would have a different cost that way. And then it would be fixed on a per unit basis. So to the extent the township believes the developer is getting a benefit by having these units without building the treatment plant, they could be paying a different tapping fee rate. Okay. For each one of the homes, you know, that would make up for some of that differential. So there's another way to approach it. I agree with you on the rate. I wouldn't be prison. That would be unfair to the homeowners to stick them with a higher rate to get the houses built.
It's not necessarily just the plant. We're also allowing you to sewer this property in a way that was not intended at a significant reduction to you. And, so, you know, when we talked about this with Ben at a public meeting, this number of 350,000 was approximately what I think it was his projection, and it's been verified by others, what it would cost to dig up 29 and lay a deeper line in there. And all So I don't think that we're pulling numbers out of the air here.
I wasn't making that accusation, Chuck. I'm simply trying to bridge the gap so that the project moves forward, the township does get the money. If we don't go forward and somebody starts all over, none of this happens. You wind up with somebody choosing their own sewer. You can argue Grinder comes and blue in the face, but ultimately, if it's an accepted methodology by DEP and there's an ownership structure that works, then somebody else, and maybe it's not 47 lots, maybe it's 41, but it doesn't equate the way that we've been able to have this discussion. And I think, like I'm suggesting to Peter, there is more than one way to get there or get close.
We'll
make it work.
I think the board is aware of what you just said in terms of you were to start over.
And I don't want to. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying to the board right now, I know the developer doesn't want to, so we're going to try as much as we can to reach that, ability to reach that, whether it's a compromise or whether it's something that's acceptable to the township. We're going to try to get there. It just doesn't make sense to start over if we don't have to.
Yeah, and this is Marlon. I want to echo what Chuck said, is suggesting that we would be worse off if you walked away and another developer came in is not the point. The point is your plan and your history and where we started in 2003 or 2002 and where we are today. Right. And the sewage solution is completely different. And you are, and your colleagues, to say not you personally, but your colleagues who are developing this property are going to see a huge savings by doing Grinder pumps, by not having to dig up the road, by not having to repave, by not having to go down possibly 21 feet, by not having to put in a pump station. That's a huge, huge savings. And what we're saying to you is we have some costs associated with a new development. You are seeing a huge savings. Meet us halfway. So far, you haven't met us halfway.
I think we have increased from where we started, and some of the concepts, Marla, that I've just broached this evening can help further bridge that gap. And that's what I'm referring to at this point. I wouldn't say we're going to get to 350. I would say that we're going to get somewhere and we're going to see if that's acceptable to the board. And the concept is to try to do it with this plan, regardless of the history, regardless of the changing and the moving over 20 years, which from a developer side is ridiculously normal. From a board side, it's very frustrating because you have one discussion, you work in good faith, and you come to an agreement, and then the developer shows up and times change, economies change, and the developer says, no, I can't do that anymore. I want to do this. And I get that. My job is to try to get us to the end with what we have as opposed to starting new. That's just so you understand where.
Right. And I think we're trying to get to the spirit of the agreement, even if some of it is not
to the letter.
Tech to the letter today.
Yeah. I understand. Right. I understand.
Regarding the 537 costs,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you understand that the rewrite involves more than just your development. It involves how we're doing a whole area.
Correct.
And I think that Lower Frederick would like to be in control of that process. And I think the costs that we submit to you, I'm guessing we can show you our estimates, and I believe they're probably reasonable, what we think it's going to cost us. And I think that's a fair way to go, that, you know, we show you what it's going to cost us, and you'd agree to work on that with us. But I believe we would like to be in control of that process.
We have to discuss that because we do a lot of sewage planning and we understand it's more than our property. We just don't think the price is appropriate. I think it was a $42,000 estimate, if I remember correctly. And we've talked to our sewer engineer who does this every day in his sleep, and his number was nowhere near that.
So, that's speak Fred with our Ebert, right?
Listener. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Fred Ebert. Yeah.
Okay. So,
but I don't know if we can use him or not, given that it's he's the engineer for the receiving treatment plant.
Yeah. Well, I'll leave. I think
he's the engineer for Schwenksville Borough Authority. He's the engineer for the people providing you with the water, not the engineer for the people treating it.
I apologize. That's correct.
I think in terms of working out what's reasonable, we'll leave that in the domain of our staff. How does that sound?
That's totally fine, Chuck.
What am I missing? Anything?
I think that was it.
The PennDOT HOP.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
Well, let me, Greg, let me ask. I haven't seen, actually, I went back a few weeks ago before the holidays, mm-hmm. try to figure out what was the PennDOT thing you were looking for us to act, you know, to work on. And I didn't see the classic, you know, PennDOT HOP agreement. It was some new agreement from PennDOT that I had never seen before. And when I asked, you know, my partners, none of them had ever seen one before. If it is the, you know, the classic agreement regarding ownership and maintenance of the stormwater facilities within the right of way, I haven't seen that, you know, come across my desk. So, you know, please send that to me and we'll look it over and talk to you about it.
Yeah, maybe Tim and Ben can shed a little more light on it, Peter.
Okay.
I don't know, Ben.
Yeah, maybe Ben. That was a TPD document. I didn't spend too much time studying it.
Yeah, that's correct. It was just so traffic planning and design is the traffic engineer that we hired to do our HOP along Gravel Pike. And they had provided some what we assumed were typical forms. And so we'll go back and revisit that and provide that to you again and have a discussion offline.
Okay.
I'll jump in here and interject. The plans that I had seen for the HOP had some concerns about what was shown on Little Road, where the emergency access connects to Little Road. It had no pedestrian signs, which I think was contrary to the ultimate goal there. I had concerns that there was no handicapped accessible ramp at the intersection of the new driveway with Gravel Pike. So there were a couple of hiccups there that made me a little uncomfortable recommending to the township to sign off on the plan until those hiccups were cleaned up. I think those are all cited in my review letter, so hopefully that's helpful towards a resolution.
Yeah, Ben and Tim, I assume we're forwarding that letter to TPD to address those issues.
That's correct, Greg, yes.
Okay. So we'll get on that, Carol, and get those cleaned up.
Thank you for accepting my comments.
Oh, you're welcome.
I think we've hit all 7 or 8 items as I've written them down. I might have had 8 because I may have broken one of your things into 2.
That's fine.
And Greg, is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you want the board to opine upon?
No, and I really do appreciate all the time that you've given us in your comments and feedback. It's very helpful. It really does help me move the ball here from our end as well. So I do appreciate your time.
And thank you for coming. It is more efficient when we can do it like this. So
I agree.
Been productive on both sides.
Thank you, Marla. I appreciate it.
We do have a raised hand if we're at a point where we'll take public. Yeah.
I have a couple of comments too written, but I'll get Brian here. Brian, you're unmuted.
All right, thank you. Good evening. This is Brian Hill, 11 Zieglerville Road. I guess to the board, I'm a little confused, and this goes on the comment. So, Mark, I don't necessarily know you have to read the comment, but this goes on the comment. With regards to grinder pumps, it's probably been about a year ago, the Sierra Club came in and did a whole presentation, or someone like the Sierra Club came in and did a whole presentation on grinder pumps, doing a rah-rah speech about that. That is the solution with regards to the less expensive option for septic. Now we're going to a developer or a builder and saying, no. We want you to do a sewer line. Well, if that's the case, then run the sewer line down the Zieglerville Road, and I'd be more than happy to tap in with them. I'm a little confused. Someone needs to explain the fact that you're okay with me getting a grinder pump in my property, but now it's not okay for a builder. And I understand there was an agreement made, but if there's a problem with the topography and the ordinance to which already states in our township that you cannot go below a certain footage, which would require the change in our ordinance, then I feel like you're subjecting the land developer and builder to something that is inappropriate. That's my comment there.
Thank you.
Mark, you have anyone else?
Yeah, I have a comment from Phil Smith. The Lower Frederick Planning Commission is currently involved with the planning, the connective township trail network associated with Melbourne Hill Development, Ziegleville area. It'd be prudent to have the developer's internal trails designed with the township's planning initiative. So we can talk some more about that as we move forward. And that was early into the discussion, so I think that a lot of that got talked about. We have another hand up. Warren, you're ready.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
It's interesting that we have so many issues here that the situation has changed over the last almost two decades, and the conditions can't be met. And it seems like the township and the developer don't see eye to eye on what we're going to do to resolve the differences to make the original plan work. Can anybody speak to what the problems would be for the township to just start from scratch on this so we don't have all these complications and we can go with the current zoning?
That's more of the developer's decision. I believe it's Mr. Jacobs.
Developer's decision, but I'm just saying if we can't come to an agreement on this, is it detrimental in any way to the township to start from scratch?
The way it works, sir, is if the developer can meet all the requirements, either currently for the current plan, that the requirements they have to meet under the current plan were actually the ones that were in place when the current plan was first filed, 15 plus years ago. The developer can make a decision, well, no, it's better for us to just abandon the current plan and start anew with a new plan that meets our current requirements. If they meet the current requirements, the township has to approve it. The approval of a subdivision plan, land development plan, is not discretionary as to the township. If the developer meets all of the applicable requirements, the township has no choice but to approve the plan. So it's really
that
up
doesn't
to
answer
develop.
My question, though.
We really can't. To be honest, we can't answer your question because until they submit a new plan that they say complies with our new requirements, we agree it complies with our current requirements, or no, you're not complying with X, A, B, and C. It's not a question we really can answer in a vacuum.
I'm just asking for what kind of scenario could come up that starting from scratch would be detrimental compared to this plan.
Like I said, sir, I don't think we can tell you that. We don't know. We don't know what they would propose.
Okay.
I am not seeing anything else.
Yep. Yep. The only other comment that, I just throw in the mix here is that, when it comes to sidewalks and trails along Little Road, I think there are benefits to having an overly wide shoulder as opposed to a sidewalk in terms of stormwater and curbing and things like that. But we can go down that path when it's appropriate.
No pun intended.
just as a general comment, to address Warren's question, the township is willing to look at any plan that's put in front of them. I think we'll leave it at that. Is there any other questions you have for us, Greg?
No, I just really appreciate the dialogue. It was very helpful. And thank you again.
Great. Thank you for coming.
That's it. Great. My pleasure. I wish everyone a good evening.
Thank you.
Thanks. Take care.
See you, Greg. See you, Ben.
See you, Peter. Yeah. Take care.
See you, Peter.
And to you, Mr. Woodward.
Okay. Moving along on our agenda, that brings us to reports. We'll start with the township engineer report.
Carol, you're muted.
That's happened in every Zoom meeting to somebody. Thank you, Mark.
Yep, no problem.
Three items on my report tonight. The first is to report that the Goshen Road sidewalk project is complete. We've received all the required documentation from the contractor, including the final invoice and a 12-month maintenance bond. We're recommending consideration of a final payment in the amount of $13,376.74 to conclude this project. The next item on my report is Swamp Creek Road. The board may recall that the township has been awarded a grant to replace an undersized culvert under Swamp Creek Road. The grant amount of $77,784 was awarded. It pays for bidding and construction of the project. Upon board authorization, bid documents would be prepared and the project advertised, such that bid award would be projected for March or April of this year. And then finally on my report is the equipment bid. The township annually issues a bid for equipment and labor to support the public works department in maintaining township infrastructure. The bid is issued using standardized PennDOT forms. The current contract with Saxon Sons expires in late March. So upon board authorization, the manager, public works director, and engineer can review and modify the 2021 list of equipment to reflect anticipated needs for this coming year and issue the request for bids. The bid would then be advertised in the local paper and uploaded to the Penn bid procurement page in anticipation of a March 2nd bid award. So those are the three items on my report tonight. Each would require some action from the board, and I'll be happy to address any questions you might have.
Any questions for Carol?
Actually, I don't have a question, but I do have a comment. Apparently, someone mentioned to me that there's a new puddle at the bottom of Goshen and Grimley from the sidewalk. Is that something you can take a look
at?
I
got that as a comment. Down at the corner where the new handicap ramp goes across to the basin. And right in between the two handicap ramps, the one going to the basin and the one going across Grimley, there's a puddle on that corner.
I looked at that area twice too. There was a puddle during a rainstorm, and when we went back afterwards, it was gone. We will take another look at that, Noel, and if it's a problem, we have a maintenance bond to address it.
Great. Terrific. Thank you.
Any other questions for Carol before we take action on the three items that she mentioned? Okay. Hearing none, we'll start at the top with the Swamp Creek Culvert replacement project. Does anybody want to make a motion on authorizing the preparation of the bid package?
I'll move.
Okay. So I'll give the tiebreaker to Marla, and So Marla Hexter makes the motion and Noel Halter seconds. So just to be clear, this is a motion to authorize the preparation, advertisement, and distribution of the bid for the Swamp Creek Culvert Replacement Project. Any discussion on this item? Fine. Hearing none. All in favor of authorizing the preparation, advertisement, and distribution of the Swamp Creek Culvert Replacement Project bid. Say aye.
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 Any against? I don't know if I heard five, but
everybody was unmuted, so
okay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number two is for the equipment bid. Again, to authorize preparation, advertisement, and distribution for the township's annual equipment bid.
I'll move that we do what you just said.
Dan Orff makes the motion. Chuck Yizer will second. How's that? Is there any further discussion? All in favor of authorizing our engineer to prepare preparation, advertisement, and distribution of the equipment bid, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any against? Motion carries unanimously. And the last one is the final payment to GMB Construction for the Goshen Road sidewalk project in the amount of $13,336.74. I'll make that motion, that we approve the final payment.
I'll second.
Chuck Yizer makes the motion. Terry Bird seconds. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the final payment to GMB Construction, as I just described, all say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any against? Great. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Carol. That brings us to the staff reports. The police chief, Chief Maxey.
Thank you, Chuck. During the month of December, we had 198 calls for service. We received some information on Monday morning that there had been some acts of vandalism that had occurred up in the Cedar Hill development. And upon further investigation, we determined that there was a mailbox cluster that had been knocked over and damaged. And there was also a private residence's up there, personal light post that had also been knocked over. And as of right now, we believe that that incident occurred sometime between late Saturday night and early Monday morning. We have not gotten a tremendous amount of information, but I'm really appealing to the residents of the township tonight that if anybody knows anything, if anybody has any types of security camera footage that they would be willing to share with us, we're really looking to try to identify the individual or individuals that were involved in this act. Obviously, there has been damage. This is going to cost money to repair. And unfortunately, it appears that that's going to fall on the homeowners at this point, but we're working to try to resolve some of these things. Also, I wanted to update the board on the hiring process. I know that we had discussed this a little bit last month, but to give you guys concrete numbers, we received 75 applications from 75 separate people for employment here. This has been the largest applicant pool that I have ever experienced since I've been the chief here over the last 12 years. It was very difficult because really, I'll be honest with you, all 75 of these applicants were really outstanding. We whittled it down to 21 people that have been brought in or being brought in for interviews. We're actually utilizing the Zoom process to start that. And Officer Rinker and Corporal Milligan began that process today. It is going to go today and tomorrow, and then next Tuesday and Wednesday. We're hoping to have an applicant pool at that point, maybe around 10 people that will move on to in-person interviews with myself and the township manager. And then we should have two individuals that we will be interested in moving forward with further testing. And I also feel that it would really be crucial to have these individuals meet the board and have the board have an opportunity to speak with them and ask them some questions before we start to finalize the process. But as I said, 75 applicants is not bad for a township of our size. I know townships three times our size don't always get 75 people that apply. So I was really touched and, and happy with that. And then finally, the police department received checks totaling the amount of $379.45 from District Court 38-203. And these monies represent traffic and criminal fines paid by defendants in various matters brought before the court. That concludes my report.
Sorry, this is Marla. I have a question. I've noticed the new equipment is out that checks your speed.
Yes.
How's that going?
I got to tell you something. It's very ironic that you asked me this question because I actually heard from the company that we purchased it from today. They were checking in to see what we thought after it's been really up and in use over the last 30 plus days. It's outstanding. It's a really interesting piece of equipment. It actually sends electronic updates to our designated devices, to your smartphone or to the computer. So it's tracking and calculating as well as doing the visual enforcement, which is flashing the speed. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback from residents, people asking to have it moved into their developments or on roadways near their homes. We're kind of moving it around, and I've put Officer Steve Rinker in charge of that because Steve is our really most technologically advanced officer. And he really understands how this device works and has been doing a great job moving that around. So if there are any residents that have not reached out to us that would like to have the speed sign moved closer to their homes or their developments or roadways, please call Steve Rinker and we'll make that happen for you. But overall, Marla, excellent piece of equipment. We really feel like we're getting a lot out of it.
Great. Great to hear.
That's great. You vision at some point you'll be able to sort of give us your overall views, findings in terms of the status of people driving on our roads. Is that something that?
Absolutely. And that's the beauty of this device is that it's twofold. It gives us that gives you the immediate impact of the visual enforcement for motorists. And as I said, I really truly believe that most people that drive around and have a tendency to be speeding, it's not an intentional act. They're distracted. They're trying to get to work. They're talking to their kids, whatever the case may be. So it provides that immediate response. And, you know, I've sat by the side of the road and I've watched as people approach it and they're going fast. The sign starts to flash, they slow down, but it's also recording data and it's downloadable data that we can then use to specifically answer questions for the residents or for the board as to what the speeds are. We've done some speed studies in the past and we kind of know our hot areas in terms of where speed on a consistent basis seems to be elevated. And once again, the correlation, Chuck, that I've drawn with, you know, just the input from the officers over the years is that these predominantly are our cut through roads. These are roads that people are using during rush hours to and from work. They're high volume roadways. And so we have a tendency to get it. But what's nice for us is that then it takes the guessing work out of us. And when we're ready to do enforcement, those are the roadways that we try to concentrate on. And I just want to remind the residents, I'm very sensitive of speed myself, unrelated to the township, but I was out walking in my own development tonight and, you know, watched a few cars go by, made me a little nervous because of the speed that they're traveling. So I'm sympathetic with this issue and we want to try and get the speed device out. We want to start getting enforcement going again. We're very close to being vaccinated for COVID here in the police department. And once that occurs, we will be back out doing our normal enforcement cycles as we've done in the past. So I appreciate the residents hanging in there with us, but we'll be back out there very shortly doing that. And we've had to make some hard decisions and kind of limit some of the things that we've done in an effort to try to preserve health inside the department and the township.
Sure. Yeah. Personally for me, you know, I've got a lot of comments from people who live on Main Street in terms of speeding. And, you know, if your studies over the course of time indicate that we should consider some traffic calming measures, you know, I would be interested in knowing what, you know, what the state of affairs are from
absolutely
hard data that you would have.
I think that maybe what we can do, Chuck, is that maybe working with the board here, we can compile a list of roadways that you are hearing from your constituents that there's specific issues with, as well as what we hear, and we can put together an overall plan here to see where we're at and if there are some additional measures that we could be implementing. And a lot of these are low cost measures. They're not right. massive undertakings in which we can kind of try to control the situation. You know, we've done some of these things in the past across the street in Springmount townhomes and throughout. And I think that they all do work. And with Carol's assistance, we're able to get some good direction with more of the more permanent emplacement of things as well.
Great. Are there any further questions for Chief Maxey? Okay. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.
You too.
That brings us to our Township Manager's report.
Have the Public Works report first.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped
over that's okay.
That. Yeah.
During the month of January, the guys got all the trucks ready for the plowing season. We completed 5 sewer inspections. We mixed the salt and cinders for the snow events. We had 2 salt and cinder events. We had 1 plowable event, and the Delphi lift station was cleaned. Short report tonight. We have the EAC bylaws. We talked about this actually back in November, and we had 2 sections. Section 2, where it talked about a special meeting, we talked about removing that, and we did that. And then in Section 4, it talked about the EAC holding a hearing, and that area was also removed. So the bylaws are back with all those, with the comments corrected. So I'd like to get a motion to pass the EAC bylaws as I presented them.
Any questions, Mark? Okay. Noel Halter makes the motion.
Second.
Dan Orff seconds. Is there any further discussion? All in favor of approving the EAC bylaws as presented to the township, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any against? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
All right. I have a couple of just updates then, too. So February 4th, the township will be holding a conditional use hearing for the Rose property, which is 225 Big Road, also known as Genterra. This will also be on the Planning Commission agenda at their January 21st meeting date, the Genterra Rose Big Road property. On February 8th, the board will be holding a continuation of the Prestige, the Little Road development conditional use hearing. That was continued at the December 29th hearing at the request of the applicant. The township has received some boxes of PPE equipment from the county for small businesses in Lower Frederick. So this is equipment for COVID. It's mask, hand sanitizer, wipes, thermometer. So if there's any small businesses in town that would like one of these PPE equipment boxes, they're free. If they just contact me, we could set up either a delivery or they can come to the township and pick them up. We did put this out on Facebook. We had the local veterinarian came in already. I was very excited about getting this. And then just also as an update, the RFP for an engineer has been advertised and received several engineer firms asking for that RFP. So those have been set out.
Right. Any questions for our township manager? I have one question, Mark. Question, Mark. I have one question for you, Mark, which is... When they clean the lift station, basically, as I understand it, they bring in the bypass pump and then clean out the lift station while it's on bypass and the pump isn't running. Is that what happens there? Do you know, or is that a question for our wastewater engineer?
No, they bring in a pump truck,
mm-hmm.
and then they just suck the whole thing down to the till it's dry as it can be, and spray it down some in the hole.
Do they do any kind of inspection of the mechanical parts that do the pumping, or is that not possible during that procedure?
No, when they come in, they actually pull the pumps up and do that. That's a different company.
Okay.
That does that.
All right.
I had a second question, Mark.
Go ahead.
Little pun there. Yep. How many times did the road crew have to deal with high water events? I know there's at least one that was on Christmas Eve, right? So,
we had the flood at the sewer plant. We had one high water event where we had the flood that the Perkiomen came out of the banks, and we got some infiltration into the wastewater treatment plant. And then, yes, we came out on Christmas Eve and closed a couple roads. So there's been two.
Yeah. I just want to make that's another good service of the road crew. And they were called out on Christmas Eve. I thought that was exemplary of them to not let the cars just drive through the big puddles. So
I'll let them know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mark? We move on. Great. Solicitor's report. Peter Nelson.
I believe the only thing I have here is the telecommunications ordinance. At a previous meeting, the board had asked that we prepare a basically design book for these, hold on, let me make sure I get the term right, small wireless facilities. And this has been prepared and I believe been forwarded to the board so you can look at it. What I'm looking for now is any comments from the board regarding this. And if the board's happy with it, we can then finalize the ordinance. And forward that all to the Planning Commission to go through the process of reviewing the ordinance and eventually getting it enacted.
So, Peter, this is Noelle. I did have a chance to go through that manual. It looks pretty standard. It's pretty detailed.
Okay, thank you.
The only thing that I was questioning was the stuff about the historical register. Is that actually a legitimate term, or
that's why I highlighted that.
Yeah,
I do. You know, my understanding is that the township has undertaken a review of historic properties and put together, for lack of a better term, a register of historic properties within the township. I don't know what the township calls this register. So that's really just a placeholder. And once the township can tell me, yeah, this is what we call our list of historic properties, we'll put it in there. But that's why that term is highlighted, because I wasn't sure what it's supposed to be.
So would we be incorporating that list with the design manual along with the ordinance, or can that come afterwards?
Well, you guys are going to have to tell me, has the township actually put together a list of historic properties?
I know several people that can probably get it done.
Yeah. Pardon?
I'm pretty sure I know a couple people that can probably get that done.
Okay, so it has not been done yet. It's something that we're intending to do.
A list does exist now, Alex.
Yes.
It just needs
to be forwarded on.
There is a list that was developed by a group, but that list has never been formally adopted, approved, sanctioned by the township.
Right.
It was more for historical resource survey of properties. So the township has not officially recognized it as a list. Does that mean something to you, Peter?
I think the decision, since you've done, putting the list together, doing the work, that's usually the big lift. What there's two options here as far as this goes. We can, you know, change the language on the design manual just to say, you know, just to reference National Register for Historic Places, or I think there's also a state version of that that we could, you know, we could mention. Or if you want, we can say, you know, any properties, you know, so designated as historic, you know, by the township, in anticipation eventually that the township will either approve this list or put together a new list of properties. Or, you know, we can just, you know, leave it out entirely until we do put together a list. And, you know, one of the reasons why we're doing the design manual is that we can update the manual without having to go through the process of reenacting an ordinance. So updating the manual would be a very simple step, which could be done once a township list is put together and approved.
Okay. Well,
maybe an option then is just to leave the language in there as, you know, historic properties as designated by the township. And therefore, when we do get around to doing that, we don't need to change that part of it.
Right. Is
that acceptable?
Yep.
To the group, does that make sense?
Except absolutely. If we enact the ordinance and neglect to designate the historic homes, that clause becomes meaningless. So that's the challenge. So we probably ought to not forget to then recognize the historic list.
So do you think we should leave it out, Marla?
No, I think we should leave it in, but I think that requires another action on our part. And I don't know, Peter, what would that be? That is, this was done as a semi-official process. So doesn't the county or another entity recognize this list? Can we reference that?
No, I think, you know, so long as the list was put together, you know, following, you know, standard procedures and standard regulations on determining what should be considered historic, as long as it wasn't, you know, just a bunch of people who just kind of went through and on their own picked houses they like or buildings they like.
Oh, no. There was actually a working group. I was part of it with a couple other people in the township through PHMC.
The list, if someone challenges the list or challenges why a building is put on the list and we can support that, you know, the only thing that needs to be done is for the township, for the board itself to say, hey, this is our list. You know, here's our list of historic, you know, structures, you know, call it whatever you will. And then once that is done, you know, we can reference it here in this design manual. I have townships that have put together historic surveys and then adopted specific zoning regulations regarding historic buildings based on that survey. So you could, once the list is completed and approved, you can then use it in a multiple of ways. Right. But there's not an outside organization that has to approve it.
All right. So we did work with the Pennsylvania Historic and Museum Commission, and they have criteria that is used to determine what is historic, not just age.
Right. Good.
So yes. What we need to do is to look at that list more carefully. But I agree with Marla. That's something that, you know, if we're going to leave the language in, then we need to follow through on it.
Yeah, I just want to concur with both Marla and Chuck. I think it's important that the lists be recognized and in a timely enough fashion so that this ordinance is in place when the list is in place. Because I think I know extensive amount of work was done on that list, and it was complete as best I know. And I think Phil Smith actually sent out something from the county that listed the list. So, but we can check into that. But thanks, Chuck and Mark.
Phil said that it is registered with the PA Historical Museum Commission, the actual list. So we may be able to just reference that list there. I will do some research and find that on the web and go from there.
That's good.
Noelle, did you have any other questions?
No.
Okay. No. So at this point, I think we, unless there are other questions, we talked about having this being put in front of the Planning Commission.
Now, does this also go to the, does it have to go to Montgomery County at the same time? or not?
Well, it's
a zoning amendment, the underlying ordinance. You know, I would send both this manual and the underlying ordinance should go to the Township Planning Commission and the County Planning Commission, and we have to give them at least 30 days before the board moves forward with adopting the ordinance. Because it's a zoning amendment, we have to do that by law.
Right.
But yeah, so they both have to go, or they have to go to both. The ordinance at a minimum should go to both, and I think the safer thing to do is to send a manual along with the ordinance.
So what further cleanup, if any, has to happen before we can make that happen?
If you're happy with the manual, the only cleanup that has to happen now is I need to go back to the ordinance and pull the language out of the ordinance that is replicated in the manual. Make sure that the manuals, you know, and also in the ordinance reference the manual, basically saying the ordinance, you have to comply with the design manual. And once that's done, you know, then it can be forwarded to the planning commissions.
And just insert the correct name of our historic list of historic houses.
Yeah, yes. We'll get that figured out.
Sounds good.
So the board is basically wants to, do we need to actually vote on it or just go by consent that we want to give Peter the go ahead to move on?
You have two options. You can table this until the ordinance is in a finished format and you can vote at that time, or you can vote now basically saying, you know, Peter, you know, we authorize you to finalize the ordinance and then forward it to the two planning commissions and advertise it for a future meeting for consideration for adoption.
Okay. I think I'd be willing to do that, except for the last part, because we just don't know how long it's going to take for it to get through planning commission, so we can't advertise a date yet, right?
Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can wait until I know until we get a planning commission, until the Township Planning Commission comes back with a recommendation, and then at that point, I can just go ahead and advertise it, or if you want, I can wait until the board looks at that recommendation and you can then authorize me to advertise it at that point. Either way works.
Okay. So is the group okay just making the motion now to have Peter finalize the ordinance and send it to the planning commission, our planning commission, as well as the Montgomery County Planning Commission for their review and comment?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So I will make that motion. That we have our solicitor finalize the proposed telecommunications ordinance and design manual and send it to our planning commission as well as the Montgomery County Planning Commission for their comments.
I'll second.
Chuck Yizer makes the motion. Noel Halter seconds. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion that I just made, say aye.
Aye.
Any against? Go ahead, Marla. Anything? Any against? The motion carries unanimously.
Sorry, I jumped in too soon. I was just going to say to Peter, you'll just let us know when it gets sent out. So that's when the clock starts ticking, right? The third day of 30 days.
Yeah, yes. No, it should be sent out by the end of this week, but I'll copy, if you wish, I can copy the board on my letter, and you'll see the letter sending it out.
And then I also assume that our planning commission then will get it on their agenda for their meeting this month.
Yep, we can do that.
And Mr. Chairman, that's all I have on my report.
Any further questions for our solicitor? Thank you, Peter. Reports from township boards and commissions. We'll start with Planning Commission.
All right.
Is that Phil?
I have Crystal here.
Oh, Crystal's there. I forgot.
Hello, everybody. Hello. The Planning Commission met, let me check the date here, December 17th, we did not have any development issues to discuss. We spent our time talking about several issues that have kind of cropped up over the past year or so and how we might want to go forward with them. We spent a good bit of time talking about those pedestrian connections around the village of Zieglerville between Melbourne Hills and the Prestige and over to the between Cobble Park and the middle school. Phil and Rainier Keown had spent some time walking around out there and they had some suggestions. We're still a long way from knowing where specific trails would go because we're waiting for some specific engineering to happen on both of those parcels to make it readily available what's going on. So we'll have more information on that going forward, but we are trying to work with the developers to ensure that there are easements provided that are broad enough to allow us to configure a trail that makes sense when the time comes to get those trails built. We also spent some time talking about potential zoning code revisions that we're probably going to look at in more detail next year. Basically, we just started putting together a list of things we need to talk about, and it's an extensive list, so I'm not going to go into it all here, but we are going to move forward on trying to make some zoning recommendations in the future to tighten up our ordinances, and we'll prioritize those as we go. And then finally, we spent some time just in a general discussion of how best to own and manage the large parcels of open space that we're likely to receive from some of these bigger developers. There are a number of ways that it can be done, advantages and costs and benefits to each option. And we discussed a good bit of that. Again, no decisions were made, no recommendations were made for the board. So it was just general conversation. And all these conversations will continue as the land developments progress through the process with the Planning Commission. And that's, we did have one official act. We had to approve a letter for one of our members for his employers to ensure that he would have no conflicts of interest. Other than that, that was it.
Thank you, Crystal. Are there any questions for the Planning Commission, Crystal? Thank you. So that brings us to the comprehensive plan update. Crystal, you want to do that?
Yeah. I think it'll be pretty quick. We are just about at the end of our comprehensive planning process. We are working with our county planner, John Miklos, to finalize the draft implementation recommendations, getting it all into a presentable form for public viewing. The next big step we're going to have is to figure out how to open this up so that the public can have a chance to see everything that we've been working on this year. It's been a very closed process since COVID struck. Before that, we had a great open conversation going. We had people coming to the meetings. We had good input from the public, and it's been very difficult to do that on Zoom over the last couple months. So everybody should be looking forward to sometime in the next couple months, the draft comprehensive plan being available for review and some method to get comments back to us in terms of what you think. We're not quite sure what that's going to be yet. There are lots of ways to do it. It might be a Zoom public meeting. So just throwing that out there. If that's what we have to do, that's what we have to do.
Yeah, I'll just add that I've not heard anything, maybe you have, Crystal, from our planner since our last meeting.
No.
But we're hoping that he comes back at this next meeting and with some materials prepared, and that will give us a real very good idea of how we might proceed moving forward with educating the public as to what the plan is.
Yeah.
And when we can do that. I will mention all of the draft chapters that we have are available on our website. There's a comprehensive plan button on the front page. An email was sent to a little over 100 residents who have shown interest in the plan, notifying them of that, as well as also notifying them of our e-news opportunity here in the township to get newsletters sent to you. You can get on a mailing list. And again, that's also on our website. So those things did happen. Any questions for Crystal or myself on the comp plan? Great. That brings us to Park and Rec. Would that be Pam?
Can everyone hear me? Good evening.
Good evening.
As our first meeting of the year, we had our reorganization vote. Pam Reich is chair. Donna Lynn Eyrich is vice chair, co-chair, and Janet Lynn O will stay on as our secretary. We set our tentative meeting calendar. We submitted that to Mark for review and approval. We also set tentative dates for our community events. We're assuming we won't be able to do an egg hunt in early spring, but later in the year, expect to be able to hold events with the public. Hopefully COVID releases its grip on us a little bit. We continued our discussion on the tree donation program. Mark was kind enough to share his experience with deploying such a program in his prior life, and that's helpful. We're looking at setting the details on that and also looking at setting levels of donation, perhaps for benches and smaller trees, to try to provide a variable, affordable options for people to make donations as they want to. The work group is going to meet at Village Center Park next week to continue planning and developing the planting plan for recovery of the canopy at that park, and what the trees identified for that, for the first phase of planting, and also the understory plants that we want there for that. I agreed to draft up a concept outline for what the program might look like for the work group to review and for us to review as a board in our next meeting. We have received a donation already of $200 from Jackie O'Neill, and thank you, Jackie. We also did a quick review of our proposed project budget for 2021. To put those items in front of everyone on the board to have them planning and thinking about what we had looked at trying to do as activities and projects for the coming year. We still have openings on the board for a few members. We're looking for anyone who wants to support our community events and help plan park projects and park improvements. And other than that, that concludes my report. Any questions?
Don't see any.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. That brings us to Environmental Advisory Council, EAC.
Ruth is here.
Yep. Ruth Heil.
Good evening, everybody. Happy New Year. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Before I get my report, I just want to make one comment. The historic resource list that was worked on, and there was so much work put in, I would support the supervisors adopting that officially as far as the EAC is concerned, because in the ordinance, section 2, it references that we are to promote and conserve natural and historic resources. So to have an official list of what those resources are adopted by the supervisors would be beneficial for us. I know about the list, but future regimes may not. So, but as far as the report goes, we met virtually on Monday, December 21st. The Tree Protection Working Group read Solicitor Nelson's response to our letter requesting legal advice on enforcement of tree protection standards in our existing subdivision and land development ordinance. The answers he provided were informative and a productive discussion followed. However, the group did have a few follow-up questions, and it is working on writing them up. Tree cutting at the Sandbrick development site was also discussed, as was the park board's desire to engage the community in the sponsoring trees, as Pam was just discussing. Jackie brought the group up to speed on the stormwater inventory project. There's a lot of work being done to develop standards and processes to make the most of the project and to so it can serve as a tool to be used by others outside of Lower Frederick, since stormwater knows no boundary. A few test sites were inventoried the week December 6th, and the group is looking to use the experience of our inspection to improve the forms and methods for data collection. For instance, they're aiming to collect information on how well the stormwater basins are functioning during heavy rain events, not just inventory them. The EAC hopes to be prepared to enlist help from other resident volunteers who are interested in reporting on stormwater incidents as well. Then a set of resources were approved as recommendations for sources of information for the Board of Supervisors to use when considering land use issues of the emerging solar farm industry issue. Chuck was present for the meeting and suggested the use of Dropbox for exchanging those documents. But the documents did get there, but they needed to go through Mark, which is not a problem. I believe he's posted them. And in those, a list of those sources has been distributed to the board. So if you have any questions on that, do let us know. Particularly, there is a recommendation to use the technical assistance of the Soil Smart program if you find that that Soil Smart program is something that interests you. Then lastly, members of the AAC were asked to review the comprehensive plan implementation strategy and provide feedback to the steering committee, as particularly as it relates to the responsibilities assigned to the EAC, but the members didn't have time to review the plan in advance of the meeting, so we did not have further discussion, but Chuck advised the group that there's opportunities to provide feedback, and we will individually provide feedback as well. So that is my report.
Great. Thank you, Ruth. Are there any comments for Ruth? I know with regard to the Dropbox, I thought Mark was working with you on getting you the right sharing privileges so you could put stuff in it, but.
Yeah, we tried it. For some reason, it wasn't working. So it's all in there now.
Okay. We'll figure it out someday.
Yep.
Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you.
That brings us to new business. Mark, do you want to sort of make the announcement there for the new?
Yeah, we are looking for residents who are interested in serving on a township board or commission to submit a letter of interest and a brief resume to the township manager, myself. My email is there, manager@lowerfrederick.org. We'll be taking names until January 15th, and we hope to do all the appointments at our general meeting in February.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Is there any other new business on the board? Okay, that brings us to public comment. Mark, do we have any comment from the public that you're aware of?
Hey, Chuck, can you hear me?
Yes, Bob Burns, right?
Yes, sir. Zimmerville Road, how you doing?
Very good. Happy New Year.
Same to you, sir. Earlier, when you were talking to Chief Max, you had mentioned something. I almost fell off my chair. Traffic calming. I had asked Mark earlier and talked to a couple other supervisors in the past month or so about possibility of bringing the traffic calming committee back on board. And was going to wait a little while until I brought it up. But since you brought it up tonight with the chief, and since you're already asking for other members of the community for other areas, I wanted to see if that was something that you guys would consider as well, bringing that committee back. I don't know if Gettner had sent in his letter, but he is still willing to be on that committee. So I'll just leave that with you so you guys can make a decision.
Yeah, I appreciate the input.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Mark, is there any other comment?
This is Ruth Heil. I can't raise my hand.
Yeah, you're good. Go ahead, Ruth.
Okay. Mine is a comment that's well beyond your jurisdiction, and it's more of a misery loves company kind of search. I'm fishing for input on how widespread my misery might be. Is anyone else having a tremendous difficulty getting their mail right now?
Yes.
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 My mail is about 4 weeks late.
I just had this discussion with another township with the Board of Supervisors, and I actually had it with two different boards yesterday during the reorg meetings about how bad the mail is. So you are not the only one, Ruth.
Okay.
It's horrible.
All right. I didn't know if the township wanted to post something to let other people know that there is a significant problem. I've been searching the local news and haven't really found anything, and the post office website does not reference any particular issues. So that's the only reason why I'm bringing it up to you. There's not a lot of public information out there about when this might get resolved or the misery sharing. So, but thank you. I just wanted to make that comment.
I had been told anecdotally that it may have something to do with mail going through Philadelphia, but I don't have any hard evidence to say that that's really the cause. Although I do know that even, you know, a letter mailed from the township to me appears to have to go through Philadelphia to get back to me. And I know we have packages that are like 2 weeks out, and, you know, we paid extra for tracking and they still haven't been delivered. So.
Yeah, Ruth, it's kind of a Bermuda Triangle. We have postal workers out with COVID, so there's fewer people to do the work. We have more people ordering things online, so the volume of mail is larger. And then there's all the internal postal service stuff that's been happening all year. So hopefully it'll get better after we get through the holiday. But yeah, it's all over the national news. I'm not sure that's going to help you, but yeah, it's bad.
No, thank you.
I did get an email from Laura Bisbang, who discussed the mailbox that Chief Maxey talked about earlier. Since the mailbox is on the ground, the post office isn't delivering. This was brought to my attention earlier today by another resident. So I have been working. I tried to call the college, talking about mail. I tried to call the Collegeville post office and several times and did not get through to anyone, but we're working on trying to get that figured out. I can unmute you, Laura, if you want to make any comment additionally.
Hi, thanks, Mark. Yes, I had actually reached out to the post office before I left the voicemail message for Chief Maxey. They said they were aware of it, and somebody evidently this morning, I didn't see it, but they sent maintenance from Collegeville out to actually force the cluster box to the ground. It's sheared off at the bolts, and they're big, heavy cluster boxes. And it was actually, I was concerned, which is, I think, Chief Maxey, the message I left for you, I was concerned that somebody would send their kids up to get their mail and it was going to fall on somebody. So post office did come out this morning. Their maintenance crew actually forcibly put it to the ground so it can't fall. And then they emptied it and took all the mail that was in there out and took it back to Collegeville. So anybody who had mail delivered yesterday that hadn't gotten to it yet, their mail has now been removed. I did speak to, we had a substitute deliver person today. And I did speak to her and she said, obviously they're not allowed to deliver mail to an unsecure location. That box is on the ground and all of the doors are actually unlocked and open. So they have to actually hold the mail at Collegeville. My concern is, I don't know that there's a way for them to communicate to anybody who gets their mail in that specific cluster box. I don't know who gets, I get my mail there, but there's no way for me to know what who of my neighbors actually gets their mail there, because there's two of them side by side. So I don't know that there's a communication going out to folks. They just see their cluster box on the ground and empty, and there's no way to really communicate what they should be doing. When I did speak to the substitute carrier today, she indicated that she was going to be speaking to her supervisor to see if they could at least drop the mail from Collegeville to Schwanksville post office, so mm-hmm. that it was more convenient for those handful mm-hmm. of residents to get to their mail. Obviously, the concern is even folks like myself who are working from home, we have work commitments from 8:30 in the morning till 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. That's when the post office is open. So now we're not potentially going to be able to get our mail for a week at a time. And you already have, obviously, as we just heard, mail issues across the board anyhow. So I don't know what the result is. And obviously we don't have an HOA, so I'm not sure who's responsible for the replacement of the box.
That's a good question. My question.
Yeah. And I think Chief Maxey, if you're still on, I think you had mentioned that you thought the residents would be responsible. I don't know how that would work. How do we reach out to residents that we don't know get their mail at that cluster box and ask them to contribute to replace a box that.
Well, I just want to say that I think that because this is kind of a falls in a very gray area.
Yeah, it does.
Traditionally, if there was a homeowners association, the homeowners association would cover something right. like this. It would be fixed. I've been talking back and forth today with Mark. We've been looking at a couple options. I'd have to go up there, which I will do tomorrow, and physically inspect the box. But it appears as though it's the pedestal that is broken, not the actual box itself. It's the pedestal that attaches to the Correct. Bottom of the mailbox and then yes. to the concrete.
Yes, that's
and right. that may be a much more manageable solution. So Mark and I are kind of kicking some things around, and I don't want to overextend myself without my boss. But we're going to see if we can try to work something out here, because I understand that this presents a significant inconvenience to not only you but to the other people that use that particular cluster box. And my hope is that if there's expenses that are required to make this repair, that in the past we have been very successful with our district justice, that when we do locate somebody, if we're lucky enough to do that, that they will be held accountable to repay whoever it may be, the residents, the township, whoever. But I just want to assure you that, Mark and I started working on this today, from the standpoint of trying to get the situation resolved so that you guys can start getting your mail again. And that's going to kind of be the priority. And I'm going to have one of my guys working on trying to track down video. We're kind of a little thin right now. We're in the right. process of hiring, and my two guys have been going through the interview process with prospective candidates. So we didn't get a whole lot accomplished today, but I'm going to be on this tomorrow morning. So maybe we can keep in touch with each other, and sure. Hopefully I should have some sort of a resolution, or Mark and I can come up with something tomorrow and we can get back in touch with you.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I think I did mention in my email, Mark, to you, the cluster boxes sit between the gap between 130 and 132. Chief Maxey, there's definitely a Ring doorbell on 132. They're newer neighbors. I don't know them, and I didn't feel comfortable sort of banging on their door and saying, hey, okay. could you call Chief Maxey if you have video? Especially in a COVID situation. I just felt that was sort of odd.
That's fine. We'll go up there. I'll go up there tomorrow and knock on the door and see if I can locate somebody. And if not, I'll leave a business card with a little note asking to get a phone call back. And hopefully it's working. And we've had great success with those Ring doorbells with locating people. So, and actually Ring makes it very easy for them to share that information with us. So hopefully we get something that's usable. I would tell you that 9 times out of 10, we're going to recognize the person ourselves without the public identifying it, identifying them to us. But nevertheless, this was kind of unusual how this just happened.
Yeah.
I had gotten some calls. I spoke to some other residents. I spoke to a woman that was actually up the street from where the cluster box is located, and she had expressed to me that her actual kind of like lamp at the end of her walkway had also been knocked over. So it sounds to me like there was probably a group of, and I don't want to use the term kids, we don't know, but you know, a group of younger people walking through the development and possibly doing this. But that must have been a tremendous amount of force to be able to break that.
Well, yeah. And actually, when I spoke to the fill-in male woman this morning, she said that, I mean, it's literally sheared off the bolts.
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. She said that normally when they see that, that's from somebody, a car. That's from somebody backing into it accidentally, and it has to. She said normally it's bigger. It's because they have to be able to get over that curb.
Sure.
She reminded me, the post person reminded me that there was a resident across the street, directly across the street from the cluster boxes in that corner house. They had a whole bunch of trees taken down. You know, there's that little copse of woods there between,
I know what I'm talking about.
And it's right across from my house. And then they had a bunch of big trees taken down. So they had a big crane in there.
Oh.
And I'm now, when she mentioned that, because, and I didn't realize that was actually on Saturday. I work from home, so I've lost track of what day it is, but she said that she wonders if maybe when they were backing out, they didn't realize maybe they had hit it. So yeah, I agree with you. I don't know that somebody would have been really mad about the bills they got to be able to get that thing off. I mean, that's a big, heavy piece of equipment and it's literally sheared off the bolt. So when she mentioned that to me this morning, I tend to agree that could have been just somebody accidentally and not realizing, because it wasn't knocked over, it was just pushed back, and it was tottering when I went down to get my mail on Saturday evening. I didn't notice it until yesterday. When I went down Saturday, it was okay, Saturday afternoon. When I went down last night, it was tottering, and that's what made me nervous, and that's what prompted me.
Okay.
I reached out to our development Facebook page here and just say, guys, don't send your kids. I'm worried it's going to fall on somebody.
Sure.
I've left a message with Chief Maxey in case it's somebody vandalizing. And I also then left a message and talked to the post office supervisor at Collegeville and let them know. And clearly they got that message because they came out this morning and they forced it to the ground so it wouldn't fall over, and then emptied it so that nobody's mail was unsecure. So,
okay.
I'm sure we'll get to the bottom of it, but I appreciate
we'll work on that. And I'll take a look at it on my, I actually cut right through the development every morning on my way into the office. And what I'll do is I'll stop and take a look tomorrow morning, see if I can see, you know, visually see something that encourages me that maybe it was a vehicle or this truck, this crane. And then that certainly will give us a place to start. And hopefully we have some video. And in the meantime, I'll continue to work with Mark and we'll see if we can come up with a viable solution that can get this resolved quickly.
Sounds great. Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you for the call and the information. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
Yeah, that was a weird one. I've been in this development for 29 years and I've never seen that one. So
nor have I.
The first. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, no problem.
Any other comments from the public? Mark?
I am not seeing anything, Chuck.
Great. So motion for adjournment?
I'll so move.
Noelle makes the motion. Marla Hexter seconds. All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank Have a good all. Night.
All right, Peter, have a good one.
You too. We're good?
Yep.
All right.